You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Conn. I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports, Craig Swan and Graham Young. Guys, how are you both?
You're good, Daniel. Thanks.
Very well.
It's a pleasure to be joined by you both. And I think the only place for us to start is Rotterdam on Tuesday night. Graham, I'll maybe start with yourself. I don't even know where to start in terms of the game, but overall, what was your thoughts?
I think with Celtic's record in the Champions League and some of the kind of harrowing statistics that have come with it or after it, moral victories are kind of hard to find. But if there was any, maybe the first half, I thought the shape was really good. And up until the goal before half time, I thought there was plenty to be pleased about because it wasn't a low block or any of these new world phrases. They were on the front foot. They were able to keep Feyenoord at bay for much of it, and then obviously the goal, and that brings back all these old fears. And the second half, I think Feyenoord get better in the second half naturally, and that was obviously aided by the Lagerbielke red card turned into a penalty. Obviously that was saved, the second goal, and the Odenholm red card in the second goal. But I genuinely think there were signs. If you take Celtic purely on this season as a new team in this Champions League, I think there was signs of optimism, but that obviously will have to be followed up with results. But for its at points, I just like the way Celtic, out of possession, were in a decent shape. Decision-making the final third wasn't great, but there was just little things. I think Hatate would be a good example of a player who, when he's at his best, I think there was opportunities for him to play the right pass. He didn't take them. But I think when you go at Lazio and Atletico at home the next two games, you'd have loved a point in a game like this. Because I think Feyenoord are flying and they found that form that they had at the tail end of last season that took them to the title. But they didn't look overly confident. I think you've got to give Celtic that in the sense. I think if Celtic were willing to kind of fold, Feyenoord would have taken advantage early. And they didn't. They were pretty resolute. Liam Scales again, this is one of these football throws up stories that there's players who certain for the exit door but have got enough kind of gumption or moxie about their play when they come in, they really show something, but not a complete disaster. I think Celtic fans have had plenty of nights with more or bigger tales of woe, but it's still quite frustrating in the bigger pit. Celtic again away in the Champions League come up short and perhaps turns back to maybe the transfer window in a couple of acquisitions could maybe have made the difference.
Just on the game itself, Graham, quickly, Joe Hart, he was at fault for the first goal. There's no doubt he wasn't at fault. He got up and screamed at the wall, and the wall wasn't great, but he should be saving that all day long.
I couldn't really get, sometimes people debate. So firstly, for me, I think you would put a wall just free in the middle of the pitch, and Hart could have been a bit more central because he was so far over to his right that it would have taken the greatest goal in history to beat him on that side, even if he just steps over one more, even with the wall on that side. But then the other argument is the wall should have been in the middle. He should have been central. And in the goal, let's look at the goal. The goal wasn't some top bin stunner. It bounced up and it's beat him. I think the wall could have done better. That's obvious, but it's got to be on the goalkeeper. It's 100% the goalkeeper.
Nice.
And that kind of goal is very Celtic in these moments where just before half time, see it out. Celtic don't seem to get many goals like that at this level. That's the kind of galling aspect that's Celtic who normally come up short in those moments. And I think Hart, I know he pointed at Will, but I just don't think there's a case to answer. I think it's on him and the way he set it up and then not being able to stop it.
It reminded me, Swanee, of there's an old quote from Sir Alex Ferguson. I don't have it in front of me, just paraphrasing, but He said, you know, you can be playing in European games and everything's going swimmingly, it's great, and then all of a sudden the roof can just cave in. And that's what it felt like the other way. Celtic had been not perfect, but the game plan had went as you'd expect, as they wanted it to, right up to the 44th minute. And then for Hart to throw that in, that's got to be so demoralising.
Celtic have learned over the years that any small mistake gets punished to the nth degree. I mean, that's just Champions League football. That's just the level you're playing at. Mm-hmm. Remember being at the first away game last season when Celtic played Shakhtar Donetsk in Poland, and they had large control of the game, switched off in a minute, let Mudryk in behind, and all of a sudden it was one each when they were 1-0 up in total control of the game. That just happens in the Champions League. That I think it happened in the Stirling game as well. Actually, I think Celtic completely dominated the game. Game against Shakhtar, they were a goal up at half time. They could have scored more. They switched off for 1 minute at the start of the second half. Mudryk scored. That just happens at that level. Celtic have to get better at dealing with those moments. And last season, there wasn't so much evidence of it on Tuesday, although Graham's right to point out there was one or two options in possession which could have led to situations that weren't taken advantage of. But it was obviously all during last season's Champions League as well. It's the killer instinct in both boxes. Mm-hmm. And you might get two chances a game, you've got to take one of them. And because invariably, if a team gets a chance against you, they'll take it. And Celtic have found that out countless times down the years. That was just another example of it on Tuesday night. You've got a relatively even Steven first half. No one's really doing anything. Celtic away from home, it suits them more. They're in the game, nice and stuffy, nice and compact, fine. Don't do anything silly. They do something silly.
And this one, sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there. I was just going to say, on the two red cards, before we come on air, you made a good comparison, I think, with Lagerbiel, because dismissal, it was reminiscent of... I forgot the players now.
I don't think Odin Thiago Holm can have any complaints in Europe. No. You make a tackle like that, you're asking for trouble. Lagerbielke, I could see the argument for... I could see why the referee did it. Wee bit naive, probably caught in the wrong place. But I go all the way back to the very first Champions League group game Celtic ever played in Juventus. In the Stadio delle Alpi. It's 2-2. There's a second to go. A cross comes in. It's going out the park. No one's getting it. Joshua Haran puts a hand on Nicola Amoruso, the Juventus striker. He goes down penalty. Mm-hmm. That's what happens in Europe. And that's just experience. That's just knowing. Don't get yourself in situations like that, because these are decisions that can happen. And people can complain all day long about referees or referees in Europe or referees in Scotland, but you know what it's going to be like in the Champions League, you know what it's going to be like in Europe. The slightest contact, that's what's going to happen. Lagerbielke put himself in a position he shouldn't have put himself in.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good comparison as well, Graham, because the Amoruso one, it was never a penalty, but then again, Haran shouldn't have, should just leave him, just don't make contact with him. And Lagerbielke the other night, I don't think it was a penalty, I think it was incredibly harsh. But it's so naive. Just let the ball run through your heart.
100%. And that's it. And I think that's European football in a nutshell, as Swanee says. Like, the smallest of margins decide it. But I think with Lagerbielke, there's been moments he's looked not bad. But I think the learning curve's steep, isn't it? And I think when you look at Narocci as well, who I don't think was perfect at Pittodrie, but I just think he's another year in his development. And I think that's been noticed as well. That I think if it was obviously, if Carter Vickers fit, he plays, but if Narocci as well, just I think he's a level up for Lager. I think Lagerbielke was viewed, price tag, everything that comes with it, as a third option, with Welsh being the fourth. Obviously, it's changed dramatically with Scales staying, Nat Phillips coming in as well, just before the deadline. But I think you would notice a difference. I think Narocci, I think the reason he was on the radar as well was how well he played for Legia Warsaw in Europe. Played in a team that beat Brendan Rodgers' Leicester City. I think you'd have really noticed a difference there as well. And that's two moments for Lagerbielke. They're not saying he can't recover from them, but the decision to get away with Ibrox, you can debate the merits, but it was sloppy in possession before the foul or non-foul in either some. And what happened the other night, I think it was completely very harsh. It was a really harsh decision, but I think that is the difference. That's this level. Best players don't put themselves in positions to give referees options to award a penalty or potentially send them off.
I think there's two aspects to it, Graham. I think what you say is correct, and I think there has to be some mitigation here. I think you are right. Lagerbielke, if you go through the stature of player, i.e. Carter Vickers, and the transfer fee for Narocci, would make you suggest that he was third pick. So Celtic have been shown as their two first pick centre-halves. Now, it's hard enough getting into the Champions League with first pick players in positions without being without guys. There has been criticism of the transfer window and how long it took to get guys in certain areas, but you can't just stockpile players because of injuries. They have been really unlucky in that front. The other point I would make on it is, when I said the point about referees, not all are the same. But good, experienced football players can work referees out in 10 minutes. You can tell he's going to let one or two things go. He's pulling people up for everybody. He's pulling things up for the tiniest thing. That happens in domestic football as well. You can tell when you watch a referee or when you're playing in a game at most levels. You can tell what you're going to get away with and what you're not.
That's a good point.
You've got to apply that to your own mindset. And there would have been incidents, I can't pick them out off the top of my head, but there have been one or two free kicks or things happened in the first 15, 20 minutes of the night where you go, right, that can I do that?
You know where you stand, though.
You know where you stand. You know where you stand in a game. That type of thing, if it happens in the first 5 or 10 minutes, you're right, fair enough. When it's happening well into the second half, you should have worked out by then.
And it's fair to say as well, Swanny, I mean, Graham touching it, this is a million miles away, certainly the defence from the team that Rodgers would pick if everyone was available, you know. Carter Vickers alone is a mammoth player for Celtic.
Yeah, he's Celtic's best defender by a mile. I mean, you can debate whether the second best defender at the club, Carl Starfelt, should have been allowed to go when he was, but listen, that's all water under the bridge now. He's gone and that's the end of it. But yeah, listen, it was as soon as Cameron Carter-Vickers was confirmed as being out for a long period and out for the start of the group stages, it was a mammoth blow. Everyone knew it was a mammoth blow because even if Narocci was fit, you're still having two young-ish guys who hadn't really bedded in together at Celtic playing at centre-half in the Champions League. So, listen, it's only going to get harder. No disrespect to Feyenoord, but Lazio and Atletico Madrid, you would imagine, will be an upgrade from them. So it's just a harsh world of the Champions League. You have to deal with it, and that's what it is.
Graham, I know you've got high hopes for Luis Palma. He made his Celtic debut the other night from the start. Were you surprised to see him start, and how did you think he got on?
to kind of add a wee bit more context, obviously watching the scouting stuff, genuinely impressed. I was a bit surprised. No one else. He is what he is. He's not, so this wouldn't really sell him as a top line, but he's not the world's quickest winger, but his technique's pretty good. I thought there was small signs of that at times. But that shot he had off in the second half, decent, but it was tough for him. I think he was decent. He was a decent in the tracking back row. I think maybe Yang. That's a problem. Celtic are left in coin flip territory now with players like Palmer. Yeah, it's not. If you've got Jota, he's starting. That's it. You've got Jota and Maeda. Jota would have played in the right, Maeda in the left. And I know they had to swap over to fit in for Palmer. So Maeda very rarely plays on the right-hand side. So that's all. They're making decisions now. That summed up what Celtic are in terms of skills as well, left-footed. And I know he thrived, but it is decisions just to mitigate as much damage as possible. But I think Palmer's got a chance. I think where he might come into his own, his technique's really good. He's crossing, cutting inside. I think he'll be, if he can make the grade in the SPFL first, the Premiership, then I think he can grow into being a European player. But for his first start away in Rotterdam, it's a pretty tough assignment. But there is signs, and I think the one thing that Palmer will bring to Celtic they haven't had in a while is a proper dead ball specialist. And his accuracy rate in corners is pretty strong. He's got a really good free kick, and he's got the type of free kick that beat Joe Hart. Like, he can hit for maybe 25, 30 yards out. So I think he has got a chance, but there's a long way to go. And Yang as well, I've been at times impressed with Yang. There's some really good moments. His feet are quick, but just, do you know how sometimes a winger, just the decision making, I think you noticed it in the St Johnson game and the game at the weekend, Dundee, the game against Dundee at the weekend. There's moments where he drops a shoulder, turns quickly. You can see why there was an appeal to sign him, but there's still a way to go there as well. Just those clever wee, you know, the drag back crosses that maybe even like Jota was good at, and there's been other players, maybe Scott Sinclair as well. It's just not that level. And Celtic, a great Brendan Rodgers team operates at its best when the wingers are on top form. like probably most teams, but they need to get that back. They need to find a way to get that working again.
I think I said to you, Graham, that Yang, and it's a bit of a bold shout, I know that, but Yang reminds me of...
This is the boldest shout in history, by the way. Let's just listen to this one, Sonny.
See what you think of this one. Yang reminds me of a really young, obviously more inexperienced, just starting out, Paddy McCourt. We've not seen the wonder goals yet, but see the way he moves his body, his quick feet. I don't know, he's just reminiscent of McCourt for me. Look at Graham's wee mischievous face.
I thought you were going to say Cristiano Ronaldo. Somebody else told me that, and I genuinely thought that's what you were going to say. That.
No, Paddy McCourt for me. Some of the goals Paddy McCourt scored were unbelievable. We've not seen any evidence of that yet. But I definitely think Yang's got a bit about him.
Move on.
Summed up well. So, see, just to sum up on the game, guys, the other night, Graham, I think it's an opportunity miss for Celtic. I really do. I mean, final, the Dutch champions, they went into it. The three results before it were 6-1, 6-1 and 5-1. And I think a lot of Celtic fans were expecting a sore one. But, I mean, I came away from that thinking, if Celtic got a draw there, it wouldn't have flattered them, really.
I think that's maybe the one sad bit here, but it's been reduced to this nearly, if perhaps, all these kind of words in between. I think the one thing I would say in Feyenoord's defence, I thought they were grown into it even the 10 minutes before half time, and after this in the second half they were just a bit more direct. I think when you watch PSV, they had that kind of total football element that Feyenoord. A slight note that would be that it's maybe not as pretty as some of the other Dutch teams when they're in full four, but they've got a streetwise element about them, and they work Celtic out enough to take the game. And you can argue the merits of Lager Bielke, but at that point anyway, the game was turning, and then with the red cards, they were able to pile it on late. So I think there was so much fear going into the game among a certain section of Celtic fans that the moral victory of nearly getting it to 0-0 at half time maybe skews your judgment of how good a performance it was. And I think Rodgers should take credit for the shape. It genuinely was. It's hard to not camp in and keep teams out, and he did that. They weren't pinned into their box, but they were also keeping Feyenoord at bay, and that deserves credit. But overall, it wasn't as if Celtic hit the post and hit the bar and forced their keeper into big saves. It was what it was. It was a decent keep Feyenoord at bay until the mistakes happened, both through the goals and the red cards. But at the same time, I don't think you can write Celtic. Just take Celtic in this campaign. Now, we know about Starfelt. Swanee made the point. Jota leaving. But a couple of games at home, it used to be Fortress Paradise. They used to be able to get results. Maybe somehow they make that happen again. And the next two games are going to be crucial to make that a reality.
I think there's two things there. One thing you have to take into account. I would never claim to be a Feyenoord expert and watch them every week, but they were missing attacking players. Important attacking players, which meant they were having to bed in a new front attacking system. Maybe that explains why in the first 30 minutes they weren't as fluent as what you thought they might be. I think that was their part to playing it. And also, sometimes you just need to burgle a result. it might just take one. You know, they get something. I mean, I remember the Lazio next at Celtic Park. I remember the Europa League game. I think most people do. That was one of those games where just a couple of moments, everybody remembers Julian's winner from the set piece, but Ryan Christie's goal, lovely finish. That was a great example of getting just a chance. Didn't he create bundles of chances that night, but they got a chance and Ryan Christie took it, and it just turned the narrative of the game. And that's what it takes in the Champions League. That's what happened on Tuesday night. Yeah. But for whatever, it's a bad goal for Celtic. It changed the narrative of the whole tie. And these are the moments that Celtic are going to have to grasp in this competition, because there's no doubt we all know the tempo is slightly different and the approach is different between Ange Postecoglou and Brendan Rodgers. We all know that. But they even had chances against Real Madrid in the first 30 minutes when they had the answer. You know, they made openings at the start of the second half, Dyson made as a miss kick. You'll get chances, but you've got to take them. It's a very simple thing to say, but you've got to take a chance when you create one. And maybe if that happens, it may change the direction of flow.
Absolutely. The other thing that I wanted to touch on, guys, before we round off today's podcast, the financial results for Celtic come out this week, Swanee, and the headline figure, £72 million in the bank. I mean, on one hand, it's remarkable that Celtic have that, and it's been run. The club has obviously been run very diligently, and I mean, it's a brilliant headline figure. But then when you go into the game Tuesday night, you kind of look at it and go, well, why have we not got two or three more marquee players? Or is that like a football manager opinion from me? Like, do you know what I mean? Is that like a wee guy thing, you think?
Oh, listen, I think it's a five-hour podcast on its own about, you know, why that, you know, the differences, the model, what you have to pay a £10 million player. I mean, I think there was an assumption among Celtic fans that they'll be, you know, Jota's gone for £25 million, maybe there'll be a £15 million player. I can remember it's what like that, because £15 million players come with, you know, when you sign a player for £1 million, I don't want to throw names out there because we're accused or something. But if you sign a player for £1 million, you pay him X amount because he's £1 million player. If somebody then comes to buy him and he's worth £10 million, you then have to pay him a £10 million wage, player wage. That's why contracts get renegotiated and new deals get signed in the middle of current deals. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to buy guys at a certain level, you have to pay a wage. And if you pay that wage, then somebody's agent should send it to somebody else's ear and, oh, he's getting that, he's getting that. All of a sudden, you've got 12 guys snaked around the manager's door wanting the same money. It's a tricky position. It's a tricky position. It's difficult. It's impossible to overcome, frankly, unless you're prepared to smash up all your wage structures and get guys in. There's nothing else you can do. And I know it's frustrating. It has to be frustrating for Celtic supporters. I know it must be. Sitting thinking, well, why not a couple of £8-10 million players in there? But there's obviously reasons for it. I'm quite sure Celtic aren't doing it just to, oh, it'd be great fun to lose games to Feyenoord. You know, there's obviously reasons for it. They're very intelligent business people in that football club. So these decisions aren't being taken lightly.
And Graham, we've got on the Record Sport website today, we've got quotes from Alan Stubbs, who's actually criticised some of the comments from Peter Lawwell on the Celtic board earlier this week when they made those announcements. To kind of paraphrase, Peter Lawwell just said that, look, we've got this money saved up and that'll come in handy for the years we don't get in the Champions League, because realistically we're not going to be in it every season, which I think is fair enough. Alan Stubbs is kind of saying that's a weird thing to say and you should always be aiming for the, you know, the top competition. But Graham, I think that's fair. I think that's definitely a fair way to look at it. Celtic can't just expect to be in the Champions League every season.
There's a couple of points to that, Dan, I think. I think the first part, when you introduce the figures, you make it the fair point. They're a very prudent football club. Well, prudent football clubs make, they mitigate circumstances for if years they don't make it. And I think with Stubbs, used the line that it was almost as if it was a waving the white flag about Rangers winning the league. But I think we were maybe right to point out that there's also years now with the coefficient where automatic qualification after next year might not be a guarantee. So it's not necessarily Celtic won't win the league. It's that the automatic path might not always be there. And there's a balance as well. You probably, one thing it made me think as well with the debates this week, now, I think you can understand, I totally agree with Swanee as well about this idea that you can understand fan frustration. If they had a left back of the calibre, Alistair Johnson, that's not if I go at Greg Taylor and he was such an asset in the way Ange played, but just a level up for Greg Taylor at left back, akin to Alistair Johnson on the right. Your central defender staying fit and a keeper who, let's be honest, the one similarity between Rodgers and Ange teams is keepers have got the ball a lot with their feet. I think if they could have a keeper who can make saves and distribute, even look at Arsenal, like David Raya the other night, I know there's fierce debate over that, but he has a level up for Aaron Ramsdale and taking the ball out. That's what teams do, they upgrade. And back to the point about Celtic, about the money as well, in terms of the statement Peter Law, I don't think that is ever, I don't think that can be looked at the wrong way. I just don't think that's, I think Alan Stubbs the point about Rangers, the idea that Celtic are waving the white flag, I just don't agree with that. I think that's, I don't think that's the way it's been, Celtic aren't saying it the way that Stubbs is interpreting it.
And Swanee,
can I just say, the one thing I find fascinating, Daniel, is, and you guys may be better at this than me because you guys are experts in European football, but it fascinates me that, no, it just fascinates me that, you know, we talk about, you know, the wage bills and the respective wage bills, and I think Celtic, somebody pointed out, might be higher than Feyenoord. I'm not sure about that. But the point I'm getting at is, I can't understand how the top players in the Scottish League, I think we would agree that the Dutch League and the Scottish League's pretty similar, really, with top teams. No, would you agree with that? No.
I think Dutch League's definitely ahead, but
I just find it fascinating that the best player in the Scottish League would be lucky if you got 25 million for him. And yet, Ajax can sell Anthony for 90 million. I'm not sure where the disparity in the league came. Frankie de Jong goes for 80. If there was a Frankie de Jong equivalent in Scotland, what would you get from him? Well, Frankie de Jong equivalent in Scotland was Virgil van Dijk.
No.
The standard he was at that time, and I know it was a few years ago, but the relative figure was nothing.
Even just somebody
has an answer for that. I just, you kind of look at it in the Dutch league and you think, wow, some of the fees that they
can. I think Feyenoord's defence or Arne Slot's defence is they're a team in their eyes. Their success last year, no one was picking them to win the league. So the squad was made up. Maybe the next version will go up, maybe 10, 15 million in terms of wages. Yeah.
But a lot to do with that, Graham, was that because basically Manchester United and other clubs cleared out the entire Ajax team?
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I think you're saying about prices.
£200 million, or what was it the centre half? Argentinian centre half?
Martinez
and Antony and other guys left and fortunes.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think the other part with Dutch football slightly that they've got in their benefit is see that second wave of teams. Like a Utrecht and an Altmar. They can do things in Europe that we would hope Aberdeen Hearts and Hibs could do. And that's, I think you can.
That's a great
point. But if you get that level of teams, that would help. See Aberdeen, like Dave Cormack, you listen to him speak. I think about this all the time. I think he's such an impressive guy. I really like him. I think he's got a really good attitude to life and football. And you can tell he wants the best for Aberdeen. And if he could actually turn those blue sky thinking into results, it would benefit Scottish football massively. If Aberdeen could finally put a team in the park that wins 31 games or 30, really pushes Celtic or Rangers close to a title and then goes on as a good run in Europe. These are the small things as well. I know there's a million ways of looking at it as well. We talked about the finances, technique, level of quality in the Celtic team, but I think other teams would argue, well, Celtic should just take care of their own business in Europe. But I think that does help other leagues as well. And they've just got a little bit more, same with Portugal as well. Like a Braga, for instance, they're always agitating, trying to get in with the top three. I think for a while they were above Sporting as well. I think that's a big thing for Scottish football eventually. Because right now, there's just that gap between those leagues, even the ones up. And you look at Feyenoord the other night, it was that just coming back, they weren't amazing, were they? They were decent enough. They were happy to go long. They weren't some silky, stunning football team you were up against. You just need to hold your hands up. They were what they were. And Celtic at moments had their time in the game. But ultimately, just still quite clear they're a level below that. And I think that's where, for Rodgers, the current players, they need everything probably to go right. Between Yang, Palma and Bernardo, you need these guys to come on big time. And the guys who are already there, and hopefully the injury list clears a bit as well. But all hope's not lost, but there is the same nagging doubts that were there before Tuesday night that probably remain for people who follow Celtic.
Just before we finish, guys, we've mentioned Lazio's next up in the Champions League, but Swansea this weekend, Livingston away from home for Celtic. I always feel like that is always the post-European game, Livingston away on that pitch. I don't know why, it just feels like it's always that game, but it'll be a tricky one.
Just in case you need to get the shop ring, we've been away for a few days, we've got the supermarket next door, it's handy.
Perfect, huh?
It's interesting, actually. Something that Celtic struggled with for a long time, and when Brendan Rodgers was here the first time, was the artificial pitches. Mm-hmm. And the sort of slower tempo of game and possession-based football tended to allow teams to get in against them. And it happened again in the Viaplay Cup tie at Kilmarnock. And it was something that Ange Postecoglou very quickly said, nothing to do with me. Play the game the way it needs to be played. We'll deal with it. And Celtic's wreck then all of a sudden started banging in goals left, right and centre at Livingston and Kilmarnock. So Celtic need to pick that thread up on Saturday, because the home game was won against Dundee last weekend, but the hard work was done at Ibrox before the international break for Celtic to open the gap, to give themselves the breathing space. When you're trying to juggle Europe, it was a very important time last season, I thought, for Celtic. What they did really well, you guys might correct me, I'm not sure they dropped a point until the World Cup.
No,
not a single point, and that was while juggling the Champions League and trying to deal with all of that. that's such an important thing if they can do that again. That ended up being, I think it was 9 points by the time they got to the World Cup break, and that was kind of what got that saw them kind of through. That's what they'll need to do again. Shipping points at places like Livingston is not on the agenda. They have to keep their foot on the gas domestically, and that allows you to then attack the European games with a bit more confidence and a bit more breathing space. Because as you saw with Rangers last year, it's hard enough in the Champions League. If you start making mistakes at home as well, it becomes an intoxicating mix.
No.
I would start on Saturday, Dan. I think it'd be important because obviously Kyogo could play and score. That goes without saying. He's an elite player in terms of finding that moment. But sometimes in a game, you know that Kyogo, just before the game kicks off, you know he's not got 20, 30, 40 touches. Why not play? Oh, why not play a little bit more direct? I'm not saying he's there yet, but there's been moments that Bilbao friendly. I thought he was decent coming off the bench against Dundee as well. Just start him, play him, give him the chance, play, just go. I just think that would be, rather than play Kyogo for 60 minutes, it's 0-0 and then you bring them on. Not saying it's obviously something Rodgers would consider anyway, but I just think, I don't think it's a game for Dyson Maeda as well. As much as his work rate's not needed because the game's already getting played in the Livingston half. I know he's worked tirelessly with Harry Kewell, improving his cross and trying his best to anyway, but I just think there's a few players, maybe Palma Yang and O. And I know it seems, how can you drop Kyogo? I'm not saying because Kyogo's not, but if there is a game you're going to give Kyogo a rest, maybe it's going to be Saturday. So I think the game suits a bit more physicality, could be an option. And it will obviously likely be Kyogo starting, but perhaps it all might be better suited to starting than coming on late, trying to find a winner.
Well, it'll be a good game. And guys, thanks very much for joining me. I've enjoyed it as always. And I should say for everyone listening, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter as well. Guys, thanks again.
Thanks, Daniel. All the best.